placed the tray on a side table next to the chair.
"I thought you might like a cup of tea, Miss Green," she said.
"No, thank you, Mrs. Trask," came Constance's low voice.
"It's your favorite, jasmine, first grade. I also brought you some madeleines. I baked them just this morning. I know how fond you are of them."
"I'm not particularly hungry," she answered. "Thank you for your trouble."
"Well, I'll just leave them here in case you change your mind."
Mrs. Trask smiled maternally, turned, and headed for the library exit. By the time she reached Proctor, the smile had faded and the look on her face had grown worried once again.
"I'll only be gone a few days," she said to him in a low tone.
"My sister should be home from the hospital by the weekend. Are you sure you'll be all right?"
Proctor nodded and watched her bustle her way back toward the kitchen before returning his gaze to the figure in the wing chair. It had been over 2 weeks since Constance had come back to the mansion at 891 Riverside Drive. She had returned grim and silent, without Agent Pendergast, and with no explanation of what had happened. Proctor, as Pendergast's chauffeur, ex-military subordinate, and general security factotum, felt that in the agent's absence it was his duty to help Constance through whatever she was dealing with. It had taken him time, patience, and effort to coax the story out of her. Even now, that story made little sense, and he was unsure what really happened. What he did know, however, was that the vast house, lacking Pendergast's presence, had changed utterly. And so too had Constance. After returning alone from Exmouth, Massachusetts, where she had gone to assist Special Agent AXL Pendergast on a private case, Constance had locked herself in her room for days, taking meals only with the greatest reluctance. When she at last emerged, she seemed a different person, gaunt, spectral. Proctor had always known her to be cool-headed, reserved, and self-possessed. But in the days that followed, she was by turns apathetic and suddenly full of restless energy, pacing about the halls and corridors as if looking for something. She abandoned all interests in the pastimes that had once possessed her, researching the Pendergast family ancestry, antiquarian studies, reading, and playing the harpsichord. After a few anxious visits from Lieutenant DeGosta, Captain Laura Hayward, and Margot Green, she had refused to see anyone. She also appeared to be, Proctor could think of no better way to put it, on her guard. The only time she showed a spark of her old self was on the very rare occasions when the phone rang or when Proctor brought the mail back from the post office box. Always, he knew, she was hoping for word from Pendergast. But there had been none. A certain high-level entity in the FBI had arranged to keep the search for Pendergast and the attendant official investigation out of reach of the news media. Nevertheless, Proctor had taken it upon himself to gather all the information he could about his employer's disappearance. The search for the body, he learned, had lasted 5 days. Since the missing person was a federal agent, exceptional effort had been expended. Coast Guard cutters had searched the waters off Exmouth. Local officers and National Guardsmen had combed the coastline from the New Hampshire border down to Cape Ann, looking for any sign, even so much as a shred of clothing. Divers had carefully examined rocks where the currents might have hung up a body, and the seafloor was scrutinized with sonar. But there had been nothing. The case remained officially open, but the unspoken conclusion was that Pendergast, gravely wounded in a fight, struggling against a vicious tidal current, weakened by the battering of waves and subjected to the 50-degree water, had been swept out to sea and drowned, his body lost in the deeps. Just 2 days before, Pendergast's lawyer, a partner in one of the oldest and most discreet law firms in New York, had finally reached out to Pendergast's surviving son, Tristram, to give him the sad news of his father's disappearance. Now Proctor approached and took a seat beside Constance. She glanced up at him as he sat down, giving him the faintest smile.